Here are the highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. Visit freetalklive.com for the full episode.
Cash payment crackdown to counter tax evasion and black economy. Australians will face a crackdown on cash-in-hand payments in an attempt by government to reduce money laundering and tax evasion. The Turnbull government has turned its attention to the black economy in an attempt to raise billions of extra dollars and intends to limit cash payments for purchase goods and services to $10,000. And I'm presuming, now, this is Australia, so it's not quite on par with the United States' dollar.
Yeah, I don't know what the exchange rate is at the moment, but it's still a fair amount of money.
I don't know off the top of my head, but it's not the same. I know that it's very rarely the same.
One Australian dollar is about 75 cents.
Okay.
At the moment.
So
75 U.S. cents.
Yeah, we ship a lot to Australia, and I always know that there's a
slight difference.
There's a diff. Well, what's interesting about Australia is they have a tax, like a sales tax, mm-hmm. or an import tax, a duty. And on delivery, if the goods are under $1,000 Australian, you don't have to pay any tax.
The recipient.
Yes, the recipient. Yeah. So, but if it's over $1,000, they do. So it's quite an interesting system.
And that's an import tax or an export tax?
Import. If you don't let criminals use the government banks, then the criminals will simply set up their own banks. I mean, this is just how it works. And if you outlaw cash, they'll simply move to some other cryptocurrency or some other foreign currency that you don't have any control over.
Yeah, I mean, clearly all of the crackdowns that they've attempted on the war on drugs have been abject failures from top to bottom. And, you know, all the financial ones really just seem to end up getting innocent people caught, where you'll have business owners going to a bank account or going to their bank and depositing cash because they do cash business and they deposit cash every day.
Yeah.
But the amount of cash they deposit every day happens to be below $10,000. Well, then they trigger a suspicious activity report because they've been cashing.
The craziest thing about that is it catches more people. It wraps more people up in the system who are just trying to do legitimate,
just innocent business,
legitimate
people.
Business under right. the government's only own eyes, but
and then you got to prove you're innocent,
right?
Which is crazy.
It's absolutely insane.
And if you think I'm making it up, we've talked about these stories before where business owners completely oblivious. They weren't trying to get around the reporting requirements. They didn't know about it. It's not like the bank comes right out and tells you about the cash transaction reporting requirements. They
right,
don't.
Right. And a lot of businesses, they want to make a lot of small transactions because they don't want to have a lot of cash on hand.
You had some more information about credit cards, maybe that people don't realize. Like you had mentioned that 3% is the typical kind of rate for what a business is paying out of any sale that the customer uses a credit card for, meaning that the business takes only 97% in of that sale.
Right.
But you said it's actually maybe more than that
so
in a sort of hidden way.
What people don't understand is that there's actually other fees. Like there's a monthly fee usually
to have
the equipment, right?
Right.
Like it actually is quite expensive. I believe I was quoted like $300 or $500 at one point from a bank. Now, there's other systems that aren't quite as expensive, depending, like, if
per
you're...
Per month?
I believe so. Now, that's to have, like, like a card reader, like, you know, like a real business card reader
that you
might
see.
Yeah, like at a, you know, a small retail shop, all right? But there's also, there's, like, virtual terminals and things, like, if you do phone orders, that might be $30 a month, you know? And there's other types of services, like maybe Square, for instance. I don't know what they charge, but you'll hook up a little adapter to a phone or something like that, and that's probably not as expensive.
Okay.
But anyway, the point that I'm making is that, yeah, there are other fees associated with that, and that's not including that 3%. So on top of that, there's another – it depends on the business, but you can have as much as like a 3% loss as a result of credit card fraud. We still actually get – people from time to time, you know, getting being outraged at how we charge more in Europe than we do in the United States. And I have to explain to them that
at the same time, though, I bet they're socialists and they love all
the
government programs.
They are. I have to explain to them that the reason the prices are higher is because in the United States, for one example is, for instance, in the United States, sales tax is added on at the end of a purchase. So the prices that they're seeing are even lower in many cases, or actually higher than they actually perceive them to be. So now, in a case of a small business like ours, we only operate from one state, and we just happen to operate from a state that doesn't have sales tax. But in other states, for instance, like if when we were operating out of New Jersey, we had a 7% sales tax there that we were forced to collect.
So wait, you had to collect sales tax on every sale, even from people outside of New Jersey?
No, just for people in New Jersey.
I see. But now you don't collect for New Jersey?
We don't, because we don't operate in New Jersey anymore.
Sweet.
Right.
That's got to feel good after all those years.
But the point here is that when you add 7% on at the end, and users are seeing a price that's 7% lower than on the product itself, there's a higher perception that there's a bigger difference than there actually is. So in some cases, there really is that big difference, because in some states, we don't have a sales tax in the United States. Mm-hmm. And if you order from a company that doesn't operate in your state, then there's also not a sales tax that is collected by the merchant anyway. Technically, you're supposed to pay that use tax, I believe, in most states. I'll just give you an idea on the difference in price between the U.S. and Europe in terms of cost. For $3.25 a package that it costs us in the United States to ship, it costs about $16 in Europe. An item that is $25.
That costs you $16 within Europe, just to be clear. You're shipping from the U.K.
The U.K. to customers.
Yeah.
With an item that costs $25 in the United States costs $44 in Europe.
Damn. Is that with or without shipping?
That's without shipping.
With all the VAT taxes included.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Of course, value-added tax makes it sound like the tax is adding some value. But, of course, we all know that's not true. Taxes don't actually add any value. They, detract from the value in the statement or in the situation, because if there were value, then the customer would be able to hold on to that value. Instead, they're just taking away value from the customer and putting it in the hands of bureaucrats. And then, of course, the bureaucrats spend that in whatever way they want to, and you don't usually see a penny of it.
So. Nope.
Was there anything else about the ban? Like, what are the criminal penalties? Do you have any idea?
There's more to the story here if you want to keep going.
I'm curious to know more about it.
Let me just keep reading. I mean,
it's outrageous to me.
Yeah, the measure was announced on Tuesday's budget, which introduced a suite of tax integrity measures aimed at individuals and companies. The black economy undermines community that in the tax system gives some businesses an unfair competitive advantage.
It was already illegal to spend $11,000 on drugs. It was already illegal to spend $11,000 on, illegal tobacco. So that hasn't changed. What they're doing is they're affecting legitimate business people who are trying to sell a product. So car dealers can no longer sell a car to somebody with cash.
Yeah, and looking at it another way, it's potentially a 6% additional cost on top of the 6% that we already have. Because now if I'm a merchant and I have to use a credit card in order to buy, when I purchase the merchandise from another company.
You're taking a hit there.
I'm taking another 6% hit. So it's like 12% potentially.
Right. And, it's one thing if you lose a $5 sale to fraud. It's another thing if somebody drives a car off the lot and then their credit card turns out to be stolen or whatever it is that they ended up using, or maybe they used somebody else's bank account or whatever. But if you've got cash in hand, that's probably not counterfeit. You've got ways of checking the cash to see if it's counterfeit. So a business that's selling a $10,000 product has an interest in taking cash because they're going to save the 3%.
Especially local businesses.
Absolutely.
It's the small businesses that are going to be affected by this the most. It's not the mega corporations. The mega corporations have other means of avoiding some of these fees. When you install software and you realize it's potentially not what you intended.
That's a little freaky situation.
You want to back up those keys and or not.
Oh, yeah, I created a whole new wallet. Keys,
but create a whole new wallet and move the funds out after you've wiped the system out.
Yeah.
Because you don't know what that software is doing or might do down the road. It could just be a back door and at some later point, something bad's going to happen.
Now, is that true with Linux? Because I've always been told that Linux is like super secure. Nothing can run without your permission.
It's super secure as long as you're not going and installing software from random sources. So,
well, now with Linux, I mean, a lot of the software install is it just unzips into a directory and you run it. It's not the same thing as like installing it into like a Windows system or something, right? Like, if I just unzip a file with Linux files in it into a directory and then run that software, that's not in any means a install.
Some software is just basically exactly like you describe it. That's how they package it. And other software, no, it will install, you know, somewhere. I mean, it sort of depends on how it's packaged. Because
you can't get virus scanners for Linux,
no,
right? Because viruses don't exist because the system's permissions are more strict and stringent with running things that could damage
things. Essentially, the way Linux works is everything is packaged for you when you install the operating system.
Maybe Linux isn't as secure as I had once thought it was.
It is. It's just not... Look, I mean, it's sort of like this. You're still that software you downloaded. It probably is fine. It's just we don't know, and there's the potential for it to be malicious, even though it probably isn't.
Right. And without rehashing what we talked about before, generally Linux considered to be a more secure system. There's, you know, pretty much viruses don't exist for it. Now you said that's because not as many people are on it, but also because of the security behind the scenes in Linux.
It's not really because there's not enough people on it. Because look at it this way: most of the internet is run on Linux.
The business side is mostly Linux.
So it's not that there's not a lot of users out there. I mean, think about it this way: servers, high powerful servers with huge internet connections. Yeah. Are going to be a prime target. If it was so vulnerable, you would see viruses and things like that.
Yeah.
But that's not what's going on. Sure, there's exploits and things like that. But if the user or the administrator of the server maintains the security, meaning they apply the updates, which are going to automatically occur, there's a single window that comes up in Linux that says, would you like to update? And it will update everything, all the critical pieces of your system.
Mm-hmm.
On Windows, you don't have that. You have many different programs. And half the time, you'll see a pop-up, and somebody will say, you know, something about security updates, and the person will click yes and download a program and get
it's
infected.
Malware.
Right. You will not see that on Linux. Yeah. It will never happen. I would say about 80% of the population is probably going to be okay on Linux today.
Right.
As long as you don't...
As long as you're just talking about basic word processing, web browsing, that's typical.
It's probably about 80% of the population. If you're not... if you're the biggest problems that people run into with Linux are not Linux, they're actually with the hardware that they have. So
incompatibilities.
Yeah, compatibility and support and things like that.
But even that's so much better now than it was.
Right. Well,
so much better.
There's problems still if you just try and install random hardware. Most of the time, you won't realize it because the issue doesn't pop up right away, or it's like an issue that's like it'll take you a week before you notice it.
You figure it out. Okay.
Yeah. So there's still lots of potential issues there.
Sure.
But the good thing about it is that there is a source for hardware that is properly supported under Linux.
ThinkPenguin.com.
www.thinkpenguin.com. Printers, laptops, desktops, accessories.
So you don't sell hardware that won't work with Linux.
Yeah, I mean, basically, there's a lot of hardware.
You're vetting it.
Yeah, there's a lot of hardware. Exactly. Yeah. And we do a lot more than that. But, there's a lot of hardware that's you can get from some of our less, respectable competitors where it's basically no better than if you just install Linux on a random system.
Gotcha. There's good reasons to not want a cashless society. Right, like if cryptocurrency did not exist, so if we're it's 2007 and we don't even have the idea of cryptocurrency yet, then the only options you have are the government fiat money in its cash form and in its more traceable check and credit card form. And that's why the government wants to move to a cashless society, and the banks as well. The banks don't want to have to handle the cash, and the government doesn't want to have people being able to make anonymous transactions, which is what cash enables. Cash enables the underground economy, and that doesn't mean just drug dealing or terrorism or whatever. That means the kid coming over and mowing your lawn, you know, paying him in cash.
Kid's going to have to start taking credit cards.
Well, eventually, that's what some of these people
they
want.
The banks won't do business with him because he's underage.
That's a good point. So you've just cut out any young person who's an entrepreneur.
You've literally just banned in one fell swoop anybody who is young and being able to pay them.
Right, if you had a cashless society. But it hasn't come to that. I mean, all of the fear about it.
I mean, in some places it has. I mean, look at...
Not completely.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, it's getting pretty close, though. Look at Sweden and look at India here. They got rid of all
India's
of their
they got rid of the high-end bills.
Yeah, I mean, I think the largest bill is what? It's under $5, basically.
Now, what's going on in Sweden?
In Sweden, they are Sweden's interesting. They're not banning cash, and they're
not. What do they have there? The kroner? What is the?
I think that might be it.
A gentleman who is a member of the Shire Free Church had died, and he winds up at the pearly gates, and there's St. Peter. He's like, "Whoa, you really exist!" And St. Peter says, "You sure do," and opens up the gate to let the man in, and everybody inside is having the godly party thing. And then in the middle of the vast expanse, there's a giant cathedral. And St. Peter says, "Shh, be real quiet around there." And the guy's like, "Why?" "Well, that's where the Catholics are. They think they're the only ones up here."
Okay, yeah, that's kind of funny.
Thank you, Matthew.
I got that one from a Catholic priest.
That's cute.
Yeah, there's one other thing. This is for you, Ian.
Yeah, Matthew.
What do you think is the building block of society, the individual or the family?
Well, I would say it's probably the individual.
Hey, Daily Digest listeners, this is Riley Blake. I enjoy Free Talk Live, and I know you do too, but finding time to listen to an entire episode isn't always easy. So I produce the Daily Digest. I appreciate those of you who have supported me on Patreon and sent Bitcoin to me to thank me for producing these digests. For those who wish to support me on Patreon, visit patreon.com/crblake86. If you wish to send Bitcoin, visit patreon.com/crblake86 for those details. That's patreon.com/crblake86. Thank you.
I don't know. The building block of society. It seems like... It just seems like a question that's I don't know if it makes any sense. Like,
okay, so you don't want to pick an answer?
It's like, yeah, it just seems like it's wrong to answer the question. It's like the expected answer is going to be family, but it's sort of like this whole religious kind of mindset, and I just don't know that. So I would say individual if my religion is libertarian.
Say again, Matthew.
Families existed before religion.
Okay, sure.
And it's an interesting question, and it's one of those mental chewing gum questions. But Chris, I understand that you understand something about Linux.
Yeah.
Okay.
He understands.
Where
a lot.
Can I go? Okay, that's great.
Yeah.
Where can I go to get a primer on Linux? And Linux operating system and software, because I have like this ancient Windows system. It's Windows 2000 Professional, and it's missing like it's DLL 32. Somebody stole it, and I'm like, yeah, they broke in the middle of the night. They stole just that bit of code.
I kind of feel like a lot of times that trying to explain to somebody how to install Linux or point them to a tutorial, your average person is just not going to be able to do it, even though it's not as difficult as installing Windows. It's still more difficult than...
Burning the CD is going to be pretty easy.
That's
then,
the most difficult part, I think.
Well, I mean, everybody knows how to boot from a CD.
Yeah, I mean, if you know how to do it...
Go ahead.
Burning the CD would be difficult for me because,
that's what I figured.
In addition to my DLL 32 being missing, my CD drives are also missing.
Well, they could probably. Okay, yeah. So, what you're saying is you couldn't even install from a CD. Does it have USB drives on it? Because you could always use a USB stick on newer systems and boot from the USB drive. But if it's really old, that didn't exist back in the day.
Like, are you just trolling
it
us?
It does have USB port.
Yeah.
And the USB port will hook up to the Wi-Fi, but on every other day, one of the USB ports dies.
Yeah, it might be time to get a new computer. I don't know.
Yeah, go check out www.thinkpenguin.com. We got some that start at $250.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, what's the affordable size?
Yeah, basically $250 is where they start.
Is that for a laptop?
For a desktop, including monitor,
no monitor,
keyboard, or mouse or anything. But you can usually use whatever you got.
Yeah, I don't need any of that.
Right.
$250, you said?
Yeah, I mean,
from
that's just
ThinkPenguin.com?
Yeah, just a basic system, but yeah.
why, in my opinion, private cryptocurrency like Zencash or Monero is better than cash, because historically people have used cash for privacy, right? If we're not on the air and our camera's turned off, it's on right now. But if I hand you cash and you don't tell anybody that I handed you cash, Chris, and then you hand me a Think Penguin product back, you know, then nobody has to know about that, right? The government doesn't have to know unless somebody chooses to report it. Whereas with credit cards, with checks, there's a paper trail every single time for every single transaction. There's some kind of a record somewhere that the government can then get into, and then they can learn about your business, and they can figure out how much they need to tax you. And so people have historically used cash for a long time for under-the-table deals where, you know, you can hire the plumber and pay him under the table or whatever. That way, you know, it's not on the books. And there's always been, you know, billions of dollars every single year in the economy that doesn't get reported. And that makes the government angry. Like, they want to get a piece of every single transaction out there because they think they deserve it. And, of course, they don't. And, you know, thank goodness for all those wonderful people that are willing to work under the table and that are willing to, you know, work the cash economy. It's those folks that the government wants to get a piece of. They want to stop those cash transactions from happening. Cash is dirty. It's hard to handle. And the robbery, you know, potential is much higher, right? So, like,
absolutely.
As far as privacy goes, with the privacy coins like Monero and Zencash, you've got privacy. You're shielded. Nobody outside of the transaction knows that it has occurred. That's my understanding of the different technologies. And then there's different technologies behind both Zencash and Monero, and I could not begin to explain them. I don't have any kind of idea of how it works. I just trust in the geeks that they've done the auditing and that they know what they're talking about. So I trust that the privacy is there. And as I said, we've got Monero being used on darknet markets, which again is another seal of approval as far as I'm concerned. For Monero's privacy factor. So you know you got the privacy with cash. You know you got the privacy with cryptos that are private. So it's not a question of which one's more private. They're both private. But it's more convenient to use crypto. You don't have to have a wad of cash that you could lose easily. With cryptocurrency, you can have a backup. So even if you lose your phone, if you've got the words, the seed words, if you've got those written down and kept in a safe place, if you lose your phone, no problem. You still have access, if you have your original backup words, to whatever amount was in that account that you thought that you lost. So you've got that extra protection of the potential for a backup, whereas if the cash burns up in a fire, well, that's the end of that, right? Or if you get a gun stuck in your face or a knife stuck in your back and a criminal robs you of your physical wallet, well, they got all the cash in
your
wallet.
Or your phone, for that matter.
They rob you of your phone, but you can have a security code on the phone.
Right.
And then after the fact, or, you know, again, you can go and restore that later on and then transfer the crypto out and transfer it to a new wallet. No problem.
I'm going to predict and believe that we're going to have a openly homosexual congressman from Albuquerque area. It's called a District 1 area. But I know that he's going to win the primary, and I know that he's going to win it in November. So he just came out of the closet just recently. So
really?
So that I'm going to vote for him in the primary if I can. And then I'm
now, this isn't anything new. I mean, there have been homosexual Congress people before, right?
Is this a conservative area? No, it's not, right?
No, not really. I mean, the whole state of New Mexico tends to be blue, but I don't. There might be some conservative
areas.
It
seems so bizarre that, like, to hear about people just coming out now, like, it's...
Yeah, I mean, are you saying, Sarah, that this is, like, some sort of brave thing this politician has done? I mean, it's 2018.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is that when he was running for counselor, he's our current city counselor. And I could never, he had a picture of with a woman with a baby, and I was thinking that must be his wife when he was running for city counselor. He was just talking, he was just a community person. So I was very confused. I thought that he was married with a son. But, okay, so then now he came out and said that I was a homosexual since when I was living in Atlanta, Georgia.
A VPN is a virtual private network for listeners that aren't familiar, and this is a way for people to, in theory, obscure what they're doing on the internet, meaning that if you're connected to a VPN, at the very least, your internet service provider shouldn't know what you're doing. But of course, the VPN provider, then you have to trust them to not be logging the things that you're doing through their connection. And of course, which ones are trustworthy is a whole other question. So you made a switch.
And you know, the other thing that it does is it mixes your traffic with other people's traffic. So right now you might have a dedicated IP. Well, when you have a VPN provider, they mix your traffic. So you have one IP address for multiple people.
Oh.
So yeah, it's harder to track people and things of that nature.
I didn't know that because I figured when I've used VPNs, I've connected and gotten different IP addresses each time I've connected.
Sure, but
so.
There's multiple users on
you're
the same IP
You're saying they're
address.
Sharing that IP.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Generally speaking.
Of course,
unless you have
if they wanted to
one.
Log you and track you, then they could, right? Like, so you still have to trust the VPN provider.
You're still
provider.
Trusting the VPN provider, but the sites that you're visiting, that's who's going to have a harder time tracking you.
Now, of course, you could always connect to a VPN and then connect to Tor once you've connected to the VPN, and that, in theory, should also give you an extra layer of protection.
Yeah, especially if you do the setup right.
I know you guys sell the VPN-enabled routers. I'm in the IT industry, and I was wondering, do you guys base that on pfSense, or what sort of open source do you base that on?
Oh, that's a good question. So it's actually based on a distribution called LibreCMC. Or I should say it's not based on it runs a distribution called LibreCMC. It's based on it's a fork of OpenWRT basically, but without the proprietary components. So
these are what you're talking about. Let me try to decode what you're saying here. You're talking about router firmware that is different than your typical Cisco or Linksys or the typical brands out there.
Yeah.
You're talking about open source router firmware that is that's what you're discussing.
That's exactly what I'm talking about. And I'm talking about going to an extreme length in terms of security and privacy and things like that.
Yeah.
Because basically, OpenWRT and basically all your open source firmwares have proprietary components that are needed in order to utilize, in order to make the routers work.
I see.
So the routers we sell actually don't have those proprietary components. We strip that out.
But they work anyway.
They work anyway because we have the sources for the Wi-Fi components and various other pieces so that we actually know there's no backdoors in it. You don't know there's no backdoors in a typical router that you install OpenWRT or pfSense or some other firmware on.
You just heard highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. You can download full episodes, subscribe to our podcast, listen live, and more, all for free at freetalklive.com.